If you've ever tried to find a map showing the feeder pattern for the Pittsburgh public schools, you might have come up empty. The school district says it doesn't have a map it can give to the public that shows which schools kids are assigned to based on where they live. So we made one, and when we looked at the map, we saw lots of stories. This is Dividing Lines, the Shape of Education in Pittsburgh, a podcast from 90.5 WESA. I'm Liz Reed. Today, the map that determines which public school a kid is assigned to in the city of Pittsburgh is full of strange shapes and jagged lines. The last time the district changed these boundaries was in 2012. There were too many buildings, not enough students, and a budget deficit. 90.5 WESA's Sarah Bowden explores how these challenges shaped the feeder pattern Pittsburgh uses today.
Kate Anglin and her husband recently purchased a home less than a mile from the Greenfield K-8 school. A key selling point was that it zones to that particular school. Anglin says figuring out these boundaries wasn't easy.
That was a frustrating process since there was no map to do that.
For each home they considered, the Anglins typed its address into a portal on the district's website, which tells you what school a certain address is assigned to. To figure out exactly what was going on with school assignments, WESA created a map of the district's feeder pattern, which I showed to Anglin.
There's a lot of little fingers and little blocks that look like they're cut out into different schools, and it'd be very interesting to look at individual blocks to see the logic or the politics of why those are that way.
School assignments used to be even more of a patchwork. Kate Reed was director of strategic priorities for the school district, where she played a key role in the 2012 realignment. Reed and I meet up at the corner of Station Street and Center Avenue near the Home Depot in East Liberty.
This was definitely a community that had a lot of different elementary feeder schools that sort of convalesced in one area and had varying borders, some more logical than others.
Boundaries of the elementary schools of Lincoln, Fulton, and the now-closed Fort Pitt converged at the intersection where Reed and I stand. Before realignment, the western side of Center Avenue flip-flopped back and forth between Fort Pitt and Fulton for about half a mile. Another problem was the old elementary feeder pattern didn't neatly overlap with the middle schools, which didn't overlap with the high schools. So when students aged into a new building, they were with a different mix of kids. Reed says this was stressful.
It wasn't fair. And that's an opinion, not a fact. But like in my opinion, it just wasn't fair to families.
Today, school assignments are more uniform. Each elementary school funnels students to only one middle or high school, depending on whether the elementary is a K-5 or K-8. Getting to this point was complicated and painful, including the closing of Oliver and Langley High Schools. Yet today's map still looks bananas. Feeder borders zigzag across the city like lightning. Some zoning is still non-contiguous. And that might always be the case, due to both Pittsburgh's labyrinth-like street grid and ever-changing demographics.
If we look right here at the corner, there used to be a huge high-rise. Now there's a Target. Guess how many kids are living in the Target? Zero.
And when you consider redlining, desegregation, and population decline, tracing the history of this map is like untangling an endless knot. James Fogarty is the executive director of A-Plus Schools, a Pittsburgh nonprofit that advocates for education quality and equity. He says the old feeder was not only confusing, it created an unequal distribution of resources.
At the time, you had 10 schools that didn't have arts, didn't have music, didn't have a librarian.
Funding is partly enrollment-based, so schools in neighborhoods that had lost population had smaller classes and therefore less money. After realignment, students and staff were more equally distributed. For example, Pittsburgh-Manchester got a librarian one day a week, but Colfax's music teacher was cut to part-time.
To get some kids, predominantly black children in this district, predominantly in high-poverty schools, the resources that white children predominantly were getting in their schools meant that we had to do some shifts.
Despite these changes, performance outcomes today are still lower for black students than white. And demographics continue to shift, so the district is likely to revisit its feeder pattern before today's grade schoolers go to college. I'm Sarah Bowden, 90.5 WESA News.
On the next episode, Zach Goldstein reports on Minideo Elementary, where the majority of students are Black, even though the neighborhood it draws from is mostly white. Find out more at wesa.fm/dividinglines. I'm Liz Reed. Thanks for listening.